Exodus chapter 16, we want to draw your attention to some verses in this chapter and the verses that we read together. But verse 15 sums up nicely what we want to look at tonight. Exodus 16, verse 15, we read, "When the children of Israel saw it, they said one to another, 'It is manna,' for they wist not what it was. And Moses said unto them, 'This is the bread which the Lord hath given you to eat.'" Coming into the book of Exodus and the opening chapters of that book, you find the children of Israel in foreign territory. However, whilst they were in Egypt, and they had served under bondage to a tyrant Pharaoh for many, many years, you find them in the opening chapters leaving the borders of Egypt behind them, leaving that foreign soil, and eventually ending up, as we have read in this chapter, in the wilderness of Sin. Traveling through this barren land before they were to reach Canaan, they were numbered some approximately 2 million lives. As they were traveling through the wilderness, they would have not been traveling on their own. They would have been traveling in families, and they also would have taken all of their earthly possessions with them. That means that they would have taken their cows, they would have taken sheep, they would have taken all their possessions out of Egypt and now into this wilderness of Sin. But as they came to the wilderness, they found something out very, very quickly. They found out that the land was unable to sustain them. However, after leaving the beauty and plenty of Egypt behind them, they were now faced with this reality, that whilst in Egypt they had food enough and to spare, and they would have had wonderful experiences in terms of eating, they would have tasted exotic fruits. However, now they're in the wilderness at the call of God, and their resources, their provisions, were wearing thin. Turning to their last resources, their emergency supplies that they had brought with them were now beginning to run dangerously low. And here in these verses, in the opening verses of this chapter, we see the children of Israel, what are they doing? They are murmuring, they are complaining before the Lord. In Egypt, they were under bondage, but they had been sustained. Pharaoh, whilst there was much that was bad concerning him and concerning all of the pharaohs in Egypt, at least we could say this, he sustained them for their labor. And they had become accustomed to this. They had become accustomed to being sustained and having their needs met. But now they had left all of this behind. Now they had went on a quest for a land that was promised to them, the land of Canaan. And in their quest for satisfaction, in their quest for Canaan, and finding that land of rest, they had now been brought to this place in Exodus chapter 16, where they were cast upon the Lord for their daily provision. Here they are in the wilderness. Here they are in the wilderness, as we have read, of Sin. And where are they? They are now brought to an end of themselves. They are now brought to the stark reality that if they are to survive physically, that they need the Lord to daily provide for them. And this world, like the wilderness, whilst it may promise much, the reality is that it produces little. It is tedious without Jesus Christ. Oh, let's face it, folks. We live in a veritable wilderness of sin, spiritually speaking. And the Lord at times will bring you to that place, just like the children of Israel, where you are at an end of yourself, where you need to look to Him for your daily provision. Maybe perhaps today in the Western world we don't experience that so much. But at times, the Lord, He brings us to an end of ourselves. It may not be to do with food, but it may be in some other way. And I wonder, in the wilderness of sin, has the Lord been doing that with you? Maybe there has been relational calamities. Maybe there has been financial catastrophes. Maybe there have been storms sent your way, and life has just become very difficult, and now you're cast upon the Lord for Him to meet you. Oh, well, you need to recognize this tonight, that this world, whilst it promises much, it gives little, and it is unable to meet the innermost needs of your heart and life. Christ learned this, and He taught of this. Whenever He was tempted by the devil with food, we read in Matthew 4, verse 4, He said, "It is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God." And Christ reminded the devil himself that man is not satisfied merely by food. He does not live by physical food. Yes, that sustains him, but that is not how he is to live his life. No, he is to live his life by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. Life is not merely about the mouth of man, rather it is about the mouth of God. And it is what you're doing with that which comes from the mouth of God that determines your eternal destination. Oh, the Corinthians. You read about this in the book of Corinthians. What was their motto? What was their thought on life? It was this: let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. But there is so much more to life than that. There is so much more to life than merely food or merely satisfaction in the things that are temporal and transient. And that's what the children of Israel learned. They learned. They were brought to an end of themselves for the Lord to even just meet them daily at the point of their need. And here He is. Here's the Lord. And what does He do? Well, He sustains them. He satisfies them. What does He satisfy them with? He satisfies them with daily bread, with daily manna. And Christ, He takes up this picture, and in John chapter 6, He says this: I am the manna from heaven. And so I want you to not miss it tonight. Here we have Jesus Christ. Here we have Him prefigured in this manna. How this manna came, how it was sent from God, and it met the children of Israel at the point of their need, at the point of their famishing, at the point of their quest for satisfaction. And the lesson is this, that it is only Jesus Christ, the manna from heaven, the bread of life, who can satisfy you, who can meet the innermost yearnings of your heart. And so tonight, for a few moments, I just want to consider Christ, the manna of heaven. Christ, the manna of heaven. We want to look at some of the details here that we find about this manna and see how they prefigure Jesus Christ. I have four thoughts for you tonight. The first thought is this: thinking about the manna of heaven, or from heaven, its composition. Its composition. Verse 31 we read of Exodus 16, the house of Israel called the name thereof manna. And it was like coriander seed, white, and the taste of it was like wafers made with honey. Falling on the frost in the morning. This manna's appearance, we are explicitly taught here in this verse, verse 31, was white. Now this is interesting, because Moses also tells us that this manna that fell day by day, it was like something. It was like coriander seed. Now, what did he mean when he said that? Well, some commentators actually believe that the manna wasn't white itself, because the coriander seed was a darker color. But we're told here that it was white. So I have to agree with those who believe it was white, because the Bible explicitly states that this manna, it was like coriander seed, it was white. In fact, the Holy Spirit emphasizes the fact that it was white. Verse 14 tells you a few other details. We read there, when the dew that lay was gone up, behold, upon the face of the wilderness, there lay a small round thing, as small as the hoar frost on the ground. So here it was, this manna, it was white, but it was also small and round. And it emphasizes the fact that it was small, because we are told here that it was like coriander seed. And that was something that was quite small. It was also stated here in verse 14, it was like the dew of the ground. So it was something that was small, something that was really relatively insignificant. It wasn't something that was large. No, it was something that was very small. And of course it would have had to have been, because there would have been 2 million of these little breads or whatever they were falling day after day to sustain the children of Israel. It was also round. It seems that it was perfectly round in its shape. Yet it was this that sustained the children of Israel through the wilderness. But it seems that whenever it fell first, the first time that they were confronted with this manna, they didn't even really notice what it was or know what it was. Verse 15, when the children of Israel saw it, they said one to another, "It is manna," for they wist not what it was. The name manna in the Hebrew, it literally means this: what is it? What is it? So as they looked at this thing lying on the ground, they called it manna. They called it, what is it? It seems that they didn't even know at first what this manna was. Yet it was small, it was white, it was round, and it satisfied their every need. It met them daily, and it was with them day after day through the wilderness. And tonight the message of the manna is Christ the Messiah. It is Jesus Christ. He alone depicts the manna from heaven. You think of all those little details that we've looked about already. Think about the fact that this little piece of manna was white. It was white. And those of you who have read through Scripture or know anything about Scripture, you'll know this, that whenever something is white in the Bible, it speaks to us of purity. It speaks to us of something that is clean, of something that is pure. And so here's this manna. We're told it's white. And what does it do? It's pointing to the perfection of Jesus Christ. It is pointing to the fact that he was sinless, that he was pure, that there was no taint in him. Also the fact that it was small and round. You think about Jesus Christ. Whenever he came to this world, he was despised. He was counted as a small thing. There was nothing really special about his birth or about his life. Whenever he came as the Messiah and the King of the Jews, did he come in great pomp? No, he was born in a manger. There was something small, we could say, about his coming into this world. He grew up in a carpenter's shed and helping his father. Oh, there was something that was extremely small in a sense about Jesus Christ. And of course, whenever he grew up and he became a man and he embarked on his earthly ministry, you remember that occasion whenever he went back to Nazareth, went back to the very place where his family was and they were in the synagogue. Oh, he came on to his own and his own received him not. Isaiah 53 tells us that we esteemed him not. And what did the children of Israel do here? They didn't even know what this manna was. Oh, so often Jesus Christ, he is misunderstood. No, but he is not merely a man. He is the Messiah. This man alone who can truly satisfy you by firstly satisfying God by a sinless life and then the offering of that life as a sacrifice for sin. Oh, tonight, in these small details, they point to the humanity, the humility, the purity of Jesus Christ. John chapter 6, Christ, after teaching a group of individuals about himself, we read there in verse 49, "Your fathers did eat manna in the wilderness and are dead." But he went on then in verse 51 and said this, "I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If any man eat of this bread, he shall live forever." Christ is not only infinite, he is also impeccable. He is the sinless sent one of God. What does verse 4 call this manna? Bread from heaven for you. Bread from heaven for you. And in the same way, we could take Jesus Christ and we could say this, he is bread from heaven for you. He was sent from heaven. Why? For you, sinful fallen man, and away from God and estranged from God, but he was sent nonetheless to die for your sins. In AD 602, Eastern Emperor Maurice watched five of his six sons be carried away by the enemy's armies. As these five young men were carried by the enemy, they were put to death. After this, he himself was called. And as he was being put to death, he cried this out, "But thou art just, O God, and righteous are thy judgments." And that man, even though there was many a trial that happened to him in his life and was being called himself to death, he couldn't question. He couldn't bring himself to question the character and nature of God. And oh, tonight, here's Jesus Christ, and he is setting before you his character and his nature in the small little details here that we have about the composition of this manna. So its composition. Notice secondly with me, its collection. Its collection. Verse 21, we read, they gathered it every morning, every man according to his eating, and when the sun waxed hot, it melted. Whenever the manna was sent from heaven, this little piece of bread or whatever its substance was, whenever it was sent from heaven, it came very early in the morning. And it actually didn't land on the ground, on the earth. It landed on the morning dew. It landed on the dew of the morning. Verse 14 we read, when the dew that lay was gone up, behold, upon the face of the wilderness, there lay a small round thing. It seems whatever the substance of this manna was, the dew was acting as a sort of a preserving agent for this manna. Whenever the manna was on the dew, it was fine. But whenever then it came into contact with the literal ground, then it began to rot, and then it began to melt and to decay. As the morning progressed, of course, the sun began to rise, and in the east it would have been extremely warm. And we find that as the dew then melted and this manna came into contact with the ground, it then began to decay. Verse 20 tells us that when they left it and they didn't gather it first thing in the morning, worms began to burrow into it and breed within. And the lesson is this, is that if they didn't go out first thing in the morning, when the dew was still on the ground, before the sun began to rise, then the manna would begin to become corrupt, the worms would enter into it and fester it, and by the afternoon, the manna would be completely gone. In other words, the lesson was this. They had to get it whilst there was time. Well, first thing in the morning, they couldn't leave it until the afternoon because their opportunity would disappear for the manna for that particular day. And so it is with Jesus Christ. The opportunity to consume Christ like this manna, it is not unlimited, rather it is limited. We only have a limited time to collect and consume Jesus Christ. The lesson for you is this tonight. Like these Jews, the children of Israel, as they had to go out early and make it a priority, so tonight it is the same with you. And in terms of collecting Jesus Christ for your soul's salvation, it must be done, and it must be done early in life. Because there is a door of opportunity. And like this manna, that door of opportunity, it begins to fade away, it begins to close. And so I say to you, consume Christ and collect Jesus Christ whilst you have time and whilst you have opportunity. Proverbs 8:17 tells us, I love them that love me, and those that seek me early shall find me. Remember, the book of Proverbs, whilst it's written generally to Israel, it is written particularly with one of Solomon's sons in mind. And you think about it. Here's Solomon, and he's counseling one of his children, and he's saying this, seek the Lord whilst it is early. And that word seek here in the Hebrew, it has the idea of seeking at the dawn of day. In other words, he's saying this, look, son, don't wait until you're older, but seek the Lord in the prime of life. The sooner a person seeks the Lord, the surer a person is of finding the Lord, because with delay brings danger. Now, there are difficulties with the antitype Jesus Christ, because he never rots and he never fades away. He abideth forever, the book of Hebrews tells us. He is that priest that abideth forever. He has always existed and always will exist. Yet at the same time, he only gives us a little window of opportunity with which to seek him. And tonight I trust you make the most of that opportunity. Don't wait until it's too late. Until that opportunity, like this manna, until that opportunity passes you by. In 1902, the volcano Mount Pelee in the Caribbean, it began to rumble. And then it began to smoke. But the people underneath, who lived near to this volcano, well, they had become accustomed to this, and there was the warning given, leave the region, evacuate the region, the volcano, it's going to erupt, but they had heard it all before. And many of them took their chances. And they stayed there in that region. And what does history tell us? History tells us this, that 3 weeks after the warning was sounded, that volcano, it erupted and 30,000 people were killed. What was the lesson? The lesson is this, there is danger in delay. And tonight, spiritually speaking, that is also the case. There's danger in delay. Oh, collect Jesus Christ, the manna of heaven, whilst there's opportunity and whilst there's time. You might say to me, well, you know what? I have plenty of time. And whenever I'm old, whenever I'm older, when I have maybe more time in my hands, well, then I'll seek Jesus Christ. Do you know what the statistics tell us? They tell us this. Someone has calculated that 1 in 700,000 people are saved age 75. 1 in 700,000. And you think about that. 1 in 700,000. Maybe you're saying to me, or saying to the Lord rather, well, I'll wait to my 60s and wait to my 70s. Well, if you're saying that, then the chances are this. The chances are that you'll never ever seek the Lord. You know, if the children of Israel had have waited and had have left it till the end even of the week, the Sabbath day, the seventh day, do you know what they would have found? No manna. Because on the sixth day, God commanded them to come and to collect twice as much manna, because the seventh day was that holy day of rest. And so if they would have come and left it till the end of the week to collect their manna, they would have found absolutely nothing. And I say to you again, with all of the compassion in my heart that I can muster, don't wait until the end of the week, the end of the month, the end of the year, the end of your life. Because the chances are this, that opportunity, it will not be there. It will not be there. It's composition, it's collection. Notice thirdly with me, it's consumption. Verse 31, we read, the house of Israel called the name thereof manna. It was like coriander seed white, and the taste of it was like wafers made with honey. There wasn't much to this manna. And as you read through the books of Exodus, Numbers, and Leviticus, and Deuteronomy, you'll discover that the children of Israel began to complain and grumble about the manna. And I have to confess that before I read this verse, I often wondered, what did that manna taste like? Was it bland? Was it just like bread? Was it like eating bread day after day for 40 years? But the answer is given here in this verse. The taste of it was like wafers made with honey. And so they found this, that although it didn't look like much, and it was small and round, whenever they went day by day, and they bent down and lifted that little piece of bread, whilst it wasn't much to look at, it tasted like honey. It was like wafers. Oh, it was far sweeter than they could have ever imagined. And whilst Christ needs to be collected, he also needs to be consumed. You must personally taste and feed off him. Just like the children of Israel, you're brought face to face with a miracle. The miracle of Jesus Christ, his virgin birth, his sinless life, and his victorious resurrection, they are all miracles. And it was a miracle day by day for literal bread to fall from heaven and fall to the ground and satisfy these Jews' need. And you're faced with a miracle. The question is this, will you consume him? Will you take of him? Not only collect him, as it were, but personally feed on Jesus Christ. Because you know what you'll find? You'll find this. That whilst he may appear bland, and he may appear small, and he may appear round, and there's maybe not much to Christianity or to Jesus Christ. That's what the world tells us, doesn't it? There's not much to Jesus Christ. It's boring, it's bland, it's dull. But you know what you'll find? You'll find that when you taste him, it'll be far sweeter than you ever could have imagined. It'd be like tasting honey every single day. David, as he was in the cave of Adullam, and he was surrounded by those who were distressed, and those who were in debt, and those who were discouraged, he took up his pen and he wrote Psalm 34. And you know what he said there in that verse 8? He said this, "Taste and see that the Lord is good." Tonight, will you do that? I'm sure there are many individuals and they could say, "I have tasted and I have seen the Lord is good. He has taken my sin debt and he has satisfied me every single day. And I have found him to be far sweeter than I ever could have imagined." And so tonight, will you consume of him? Personally take of him and feed on him for your soul's salvation. It's composition, collection, it's... I want you to notice lastly here then quickly with me, it's continuation. Continuation, verse 16, we read, "This is the thing which the Lord hath commanded, gather it of every man according to his eating, an omer for every man, according to the number of your persons, take ye every man for them which are in his tents." Imagine this, 2 million people traveling through the wilderness day after day. And as they get up out of their tents, remember they would have traveled in tents, they were just pilgrims, they were just strangers, they were only passing through the wilderness. They didn't have a permanent home in the wilderness. But whenever they got up every single day, what did they find? Exactly the amount of manna that each individual needed. And of course every person had to come and personally bend before this manna and take it. And sometimes the head of the home would come and he would take for his family. That's what it speaks of here in this verse. Take every man which are in his tents. But what did they find? They found every single day. Not a day was missed. Of course, except every seventh day. And they were told to gather twice as much on the sixth day. Every single day for 40 years, they could depend on this. That in the morning when I wake up and I see the dew in the ground, the manna will be there. It'll be there when I need it. It'll be there even when I'm not even that hungry. But I need it to sustain me day by day. They found that day after day it came and it was there. Verse 4 of this chapter emphasizes this for us. A certain rate every day. And verse 21 again, they gathered it every morning. And whilst conversion to Christ occurs but once, consumption of Christ is ongoing. It is a day by day feeding upon Christ and tasting and seeing that he is good daily. Oh, tonight the beauty is this, that whenever you taste and see, you'll know that the Lord is good. And day after day, when you come again, as it were, out of your spiritual tent, and you begin a new day in this wilderness of sin, you'll find that one constant thing. Jesus Christ, the man of heaven, he's there. He's there when you don't feel your need of him. He's there when you do feel your need of him. He is there. He continues. He never changes. He will never let you down. As Zephaniah put it in Zephaniah chapter 3, he faileth not. He faileth not. And you'll have to learn. Like the children of Israel, verse 4 tells us the manna was given to prove them, to test them. You'll learn daily that you'll be proved and you'll be tested, but you'll learn that when you lean upon him and you feast upon him and you feed on Jesus Christ, that manna from heaven, he'll always satisfy you. He will always sustain you. He will always be with you through this wilderness. Christ, the manna from heaven. May the Lord bless his word to your lives this evening.